it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
BetMGM Network presents to you the most unique show in sports.
I'm an NFL junkie. I think I like the NFL more than my wife. Don't tell her. Don't tell anybody. I love the National Football League.
A show so unapologetically original, it needs its own word to describe it. Wagertainment.
Money won. Is twice as sweet as money here.
Featuring the prop king himself, Nick Kostos.
The idea that Bo Nix is like regressed all of a sudden, like he doesn't suck. You might not like him, but he doesn't suck. Watch him suck now on Sunday. Does anyone understand the irony of the fact that Travis Kelce on his podcast that he does with his brother is saying, my head wasn't in the game to start on Friday night. Head so far up his rear end he could smell the pancakes he had for breakfast. Figure it out, 87. Like, come on.
This is You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
What's up, everybody? Happy and merry, terrific Football Tuesday to you and yours. This is You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Nick Kostos, Femi Abebefe, our crew, and you here on the Odyssey app, on SiriusXM, on YouTube, on Twitch, on radio stations nationwide, in your hearts and in your minds, as we bring you the fastest show in all of wagertainment. Talking all things sports betting. The show presented today and always by BetMGM. Make it legendary by downloading the BetMGM app and visiting BetMGM.com. Coming up today on the show, following a wild week 3 college football Saturday, Femi Abebefe and I are here to preview some of the big games this week in college football, give bets for some of the big games this week in college football, and hit some big picture storylines, including, should you, dear listener and dear viewer, be considering a bet on Notre Dame to run the table and make the college football playoff? Is there a long shot Heisman bet that you should be considering? And will the result of this weekend's Michigan-Nebraska game impact potential teams to make the college football playoff? We will talk college football from this past weekend and spin it forward to this weekend. Femi and I will also give you our early bets coming up for week number 3 in the National Football League. And I'm just telling everybody right now, I've got a bet coming up for this week in the National Football League that's going to blow your socks off. I can't wait to share it with Femi. I can't wait to share it with all of you. Our early bets are on the way for week 3 in the NFL. I, Nick Kostos, can be an angry person sometimes. Just wait till we go to break and we talk to Bill Zimmerman about the fact that the Open has still not been updated since last week. And it's Tuesday. And we had a show reacting already to what happened this weekend yesterday. Oh, I was pissed this weekend betting the National Football League. Because as everyone knows, when you're a sports bettor, it's never your fault when the bet doesn't cash. It's always someone else's fault. And I will hold those people accountable. The people that cost us money this past weekend in the NFL. He's a slap coming up later this hour. Two tremendous guests will join us as we move along. Odyssey Sports NFL insider, Super Bowl champion, the great Mark Schlereth at 5 o'clock Eastern, and our pal Drew Dinsick, the whale capper from NBC Sports, 6:20 p.m. Eastern time, giving us bets for this coming weekend in the NFL. And all of our bets for tonight in the world of sports will close the program in the final hour, the power hour. And in the final hour, the power hour, when we are joined by Brad Evans of BetMGM tonight, we are going to have Brad do something live on the air that we think you, our listeners and viewers, will really enjoy. And it has nothing to do with his nickname. Thankfully, the Bald Freak. We officially begin, though, the terrific Football Tuesday edition of You Better You Bet with last night's Monday Night Football doubleheader. As the Tampa Bay Buckman, I am glad that I posed the end of the show the way that I did yesterday. And, you know, I would have said this either way, no matter what happened in the game, because I think you could tell if you listened or watched the end of the show yesterday, I was very lukewarm on the Houston Texans stuff that I had liked earlier in the week, last week, later in the week, last week, even earlier in yesterday's show. And I did text the crew that I bought out of my Texans bet before kickoff last night. So show goes off the air about 6:54. Game kicks off at 7 o'clock Eastern. I bought out somewhere in the range of 6:55 to 6:57. I said, you know what? I don't want anything to do with this game with the Houston Texans. And I'm happy I did with the way the game ended. As Tampa wins an absolute... And Tyler insulted me in the chat. We'll get to Tyler in a second. And I mean that sincerely. Tampa wins a thriller on the road in Houston, 20-19, which, candidly, is my favorite final score in the history of the National Football League. That is the final score of Super Bowl 25. January 27th, 1991, Tampa, Florida, Giants over the Bills, shaping the sports fandom and life of a young Nick Kostos. Hell yeah. The Bucs beat the Houston Texans last night in an absolute thriller. And then in the opposite of a thriller, the Los Angeles Chargers smother Geno Smith and the Las Vegas Raiders en route to a 20-9 win. That was just, I mean, you could have given the Raiders 8 more quarters, and I'm not sure that they could have come back from that 11-point deficit in last night's game. A thorough beatdown for the Los Angeles Chargers to the Las Vegas Raiders. And we'll start with the first game. Mostly because it was way better than the second game. And also, I think there's more interesting things to say about both teams. And I want to begin just by throwing this out there. Because there were some people last night, I saw them on social media. We even had, on our show crew, our friend Tyler Morales. And Tyler's a huge sports fan. And he's a really, really smart sports fan. I mean, he's obsessed with sports in the way that, like, we collectively are obsessed with sports. Tyler texts us during the fourth quarter of last night's game. This game sucks. Texans, Bucks, it sucks. I saw people on social media saying, well, this game's not exciting. Where's the offense? Why are there no
offensive explosions? I need more points. I need explosive plays. This is not tough. That's not how I like to watch football.
People that say things like that, including Tyler, they actually, despite me mocking them just now, they don't deserve our scorn. They deserve our pity. Because they can't recognize an awesome defensive stalemate staring them in the face. No, last night's game between the Texans and Bucks was not an amalgam of Giants-Cowboys on Sunday, 40-37 in favor of Dallas. It was not the doppelganger of Bills 41, Ravens 40, week one, Sunday Night Football. But it was still a badass football game with awesome defense, hard-hitting defense, physical defense. And even though some of the coaching in spots, I think severely let their teams down, and we'll get to some of it, especially on the Texans side, I loved the chess match between the coaching staffs, between the players. I thought this was an outstanding football game. Texans losing at the last second to Tampa, 20-19. And in the end of the game, for the second consecutive week, shake and bake. Baker Mayfield, in what could be, over the balance of his NFL career, this might be like the signature Baker Mayfield game. Like, got the absolute crap kicked out of him by the Houston Texans defense. Down both of his offensive tackles, Tristan Wirfs and then Luke Goedeke. And Goedeke's going to be out for a while longer. That news broke a little while ago. Without both of his offensive tackles against Will Anderson, against Danielle Hunter, against this amazing Houston defense, Baker Mayfield, at the end of the game, after starting the game with two consecutive touchdown drives, seven straight drives with no points, with everything on the line, leads the Bucs down the field for the winning touchdown. After he did the same thing on the road in Atlanta, week one, NFL Sunday. What a performance by Baker Mayfield. What a closing to the game by Baker Mayfield for the second consecutive week. And I'm going to continue to give Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers their flowers. But I actually feel compelled to first discuss what we saw last night from the Houston Texans, who are now 0-2 to start the season. Opponents matter. It's not like the Texans are losing to, you know, like the Carolina Panthers and the New York Giants. They've lost to two playoff teams from last year to start the year. The Los Angeles Rams and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So opponents do matter for the Houston Texans. But remember what we said all summer long as it regarded the Houston Texans and the potential issues that the Houston Texans were going to have this season, year three of DeMeco Ryans, year three of C.J. Stroud. What did we say all summer? The offensive line is absolutely terrible, which you don't have to be offensive line guru to know that. Just look at, they had good players last year and it was bad. Their strategy was to get rid of the good players and just try with like five new bad players. Good luck. The epitome of throwing bleep at the wall to see what sticks. Guess what? It's all on the floor. None of it is stuck for the Houston Texans. So the offensive line stinks. How many good skill position players do the Houston Texans have outside of Nico Collins? Name them. I'm listening. I'll do my best Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Frazier Crane impersonation. Hello, You Better You Bet listeners and viewers. I'm listening. What do you have to say? Nick Chubb? Oh, well, Nick Chubb had a touchdown run at the end of the game. The Bucs absolutely let him score. You think that, like, 65-year-old Nick Chubb off of, like, nine season-ending leg injuries after doing nothing the entire game on one of the biggest drive of the game is just bursting through the line for 25 yards? No way. No way. Maybe Jaden Higgins can be good. I don't know. They don't throw him the football. He did go over on, thankfully for that, did go over on one reception. Maybe Jalen Noel is good. I don't know. They don't throw him the football. I have no idea. Maybe Christian Kirk will be good when he makes his season debut, possibly this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars, one of his former teams. We'll see. But like I said, all summer, outside of Nico Collins, where's the help for C.J. Stroud? Is Joe Mixon coming back? No one knows the answer to that question. Feels like if he does, it ain't gonna be for a while. We're about to enter week three, and there's been no injury update on Joe Mixon. None. Does that sound good to anyone? Guy dealing with like multiple lower leg injuries? Does not sound great to me. And then there's the whole situation with the offensive coordinator. We called last year, and we were not the only ones on You Better You Bet. You would have to candidly be like brain damaged to not see this. So this is not to paint ourselves as football geniuses. Bobby Slowick had to go. He was a brutal offensive coordinator. Do people remember when, after Slowick's first, do you remember when Bobby Slowick, after his first year, got like head coaching buzz? And then last year, I mean, you watch these games and you're just, what the hell's going on here? So the Texans move on from Slowick. And in his place, a Sean McVay disciple. As are like, I don't know, 99.9% of offensive coaches now in the NFL from the Shanahan McVay tree. Nick Haley. Fantastic first name. Doesn't look like much of a play caller. If you didn't know, seriously, If you didn't know the Texans had moved on from Bobby Slowick, you had no idea that that happened, and you watched last night's game, would you think that Slowick were still in charge of the offense? Calling the plays? On one of the biggest drives of the game, you could actually say it's the biggest part of the game outside of Baker at the very end. Texans are down 14-10. We're in the start of the fourth quarter. 10-play, 71-yard drive. First and goal from the 8, 7 yards to Nico Collins. Second and goal from the 1. On second and goal from the 1, Nick Chubb gets stuffed by Vita Vea. What a shock! And what we saw transpire on third and goal from the 1 and fourth and goal from the 1, I think is going to be an encapsulation, a microcosm of what the rest of the season is going to look like on offense for the 2025 Houston Texans. We'll talk about it on the other side, and then we will praise the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'm going to give you a bet that I like as a result of last night's game that has nothing to do with either the Bucks or the Texans. We'll get into the Chargers and the Raiders as well.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
The voice of Joe Buck calling the game last night on ESPN. Buck and Aikman, absolutely sensational, as always. And then Houston Texans head coach DeMeco Ryans. DeMeco had a lot to say after last night's game. And we will get to some of that in a moment. But first, the play calls there. When you get down by the goal line there, and look, like, I can understand to a degree, you don't want to run the ball with Nick Chubb. Like, you can't run the ball with Nick Chubb because he's not fast enough to get to the edge at the goal line. And, like, Vita Vea is going to absolutely blow up the middle of the offensive line for the Houston Texans. So I can understand, like, not wanting to run with Nick Chubb there. You also have Woody Marks, who I've been calling for months with Joe Mixon out to be the primary running back of this team, who actually looked good and had some juice running the ball last night. You had him as an option. Or, you know, maybe you could quarterback sneak it from the 1 yard line. And I know I'm saying, like, the middle of the line gets blown up potentially. Like, tush push. Are the Eagles the only team that can run this play? No one else can run this play. There's nothing else you can do there but to throw two passes in each corner of the end zone to Nico Collins. Like, that's it. The fourth down play call on fourth and 1. This is one of those calls. Sprint left option is the name of the call. And I'm not trying to, like, this is not me cosplaying as, like, you know, like I'm like a football, like an X's and O's guru. I'm not. But look, like that's what the play's called. Sprint left option, right? You cut off one side of the field with a right-handed quarterback in C.J. Stroud, and he can't find Nico Collins, who's covered in the end zone by Zion McCollum. It's one of those play calls where, and I'm not trying to make it like, oh, well, you know, it's like the weak side linebacker did this, so he should have had the safety valve coming up to, I don't know any of that. I don't care about any of that. I don't know it. I don't pretend to know it. But this is one of those calls, again, where you don't have to be a football coach. You don't have to be grinding the all-22 in a smoke-filled room with like a couple fingers of bourbon, licking Cheeto dust off your fingers like a stone college freshman. You don't have to do that to watch that play call and know this is tremendously stupid. When everyone that's watching, and everyone goes on social media immediately to say, what the hell was that? Chances are it's not good. And I'm not trying to paint this as like groupthink and like, if everyone says something, it has to be right. This one was obvious. What a stupid play call. And you move on from Bobby Slowick, and the thought is, it can't possibly get worse. Okay, like, I can buy that it can't get worse. But maybe it can be just as bad. And on the third down play, we're like, back corner of the end zone to Nico Collins. Like, can we have, like, a real, like, a measured C.J. Stroud conversation? Stroud actually has Nico Collins on that play. Now, think about the touchdown pass that Collins caught on the opening drive of the game. Like, he's one of the best receivers in the league. Period. Full stop. He's outstanding. If you get him the ball with any limited amount of real estate, you have confidence he's going to catch it and get his feet down. He's outstanding. Stroud's got him and just absolutely misses him. And to be fair to Nick Caley, who blew the fourth down call, like, we may not be having this Nick Caley conversation. He may not get exposed with that brutal fourth down play call if Stroud makes the throw that he needs to make on third down. A brutal miss by C.J. Stroud. You know, Jake played that D'Amico Ryans soundbite coming back from break. D'Amico Ryans separately was asked about C.J. Stroud's struggles. D'Amico said, and I quote, "We go 2 for 9 on third down. What do we even do if we can't get the ball in at the goal line?" He kind of crushed Stroud in a really nice way. He's a good coach, and he seems like a good communicator. Like, he's not going to make Stroud, like, outright throw Stroud under the bus. He's not going to do that. And he's not going to, like, halfway do it with, like, a crazed look on his face like Liam Cohen. We'll get to the Jags-Texans game on Sunday in a few. He basically, like, read between the lines. He crushed C.J. Stroud after this game for Stroud's performance. Stroud had an unbelievable rookie season 2 years ago. It's one of the best rookie seasons a quarterback's had in the history of the National Football League. And we've kind of, like, forgotten about it because, like, Jaden Daniels then, like, one-upped him last year and, like, got to Championship Sunday. It's also worth noting, in fairness to C.J. Stroud, he's been the quarterback of the Texans for 2 years. They've been in the final four of the AFC both years. Like, that does need to be said. It does need to be said. But we watch the games. C.J. Stroud unquestionably took a step back last year. Unquestionably. There's no doubt about it. Was like, and I'll even use fantasy football as a barometer here. I think people are going to understand the way I'm going to phrase this, right? Stroud was a top fantasy at quarterback last year. This year, you could get him very late in drafts as your QB2. Not a great season last year for C.J. Stroud, despite the division championship and then throttling Justin Herbert and the Chargers in the wild card round. And the thought is, you fire Bobby Slowick, new coordinator, like, reshuffle the offensive line, we're going to get C.J. Stroud right. And he can turn it around. Facing two playoff teams, like, two good defenses. Todd Bowles, a defensive mastermind. He can get it going. I don't know how you watch these first two games of the season and you're not disappointed in Stroud, even with not a ton of talent around him. Because if he's that level of quarterback, then he should be able to elevate Dalton Schultz, elevate Xavier Hutchinson, and the rookie receivers, and it hasn't happened just yet. Again, this is why I didn't like the Texans coming into the year. Offensive line issues. See about the play caller. Lack of talent at the skill positions. Do you trust Stroud to be able to get the job done with all of these things potentially working against him? Two games into the season, and he has not passed the test. And they're 0-2 to start the season are the Houston Texans. And that takes us briefly here to Sunday's game on the road in Jacksonville against the Jaguars. And I bet the Jaguars to win the division. And I said multiple times over the summer, my thought is less that I love Jacksonville. I do like Jacksonville more than I want to be anti-Houston. Perhaps I backed the wrong horse in this race. It's possible that that's the case, and maybe literally the other horse, the colt, was the right one to back. We'll see. Indianapolis at 2-0. But at this moment, I feel decent about my decision to go against Houston. And you know, you already know, I'm betting the Jaguars this week. I'm taking Jacksonville. Because for as good as Houston's defense did against Baker in the passing game, and we'll talk about Tampa in a second, Bucky Irving and Rashad White ran down their throats. And now, here's Travis Etienne and Bashal Tootin. Brian Thomas Jr. can't be worse. Shouldn't say that. Maybe he could be. I'll take the Jaguars over the Texans coming up on Sunday to send Houston to 0-3. You bet on this Tuesday, recapping Monday Night Football. Now, as for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not quite a Pyrrhic victory for them, losing Kalijah Kancey, first-round pick a couple years ago on the defensive line, torn pectoral, going to be out for the season. I don't know if this is like Pyrrhic victory category, but that sucks, right, to lose a really good player on the defensive line. So that does need to be said, like, that happened. They lost Kancey for the season last night, but they did win. Okay, I think we've got our technical issues squared away. Apologize to everybody. It looks like the call is stabilized here, so apologies for the issues there. If the connection dropped for a few seconds, it certainly did on video. So an incredibly impressive win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, down both of their tackles last night. And Baker Mayfield, just majestic, getting the tar beaten out of him, getting up, still ticking, still winning games. The closing drive for Tampa, 4th and 10, deep in their own territory. Baker with a first down run of 15 yards. When that play happens, I'm curious if you, the listener, you, the viewer, if you agree. In that moment, I am saying to myself, game's over. Tampa won. I don't think Baker is going to be denied. And he wasn't. And while Baker, correctly, is getting the flowers today, and everyone's praising Baker Mayfield, I'd like to take a moment, and I can't believe I'm doing this sincerely, to praise the game management of Todd Bowles. We are like squarely now in like dogs and cats flying. Hell has frozen over. The far left and the far right have come together to sing Kumbaya. Todd Bowles is managing the ends of games well for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, people can say what they want about did they or did they not let Nick Chubb score? I think they absolutely did. And then the management at the end, keeping the timeouts and giving them the option to run or pass at the end of the game, I thought was absolutely brilliant. And ending with a Rashad White touchdown run where I feel like everyone knew they were going to run the ball there with timeouts, with 9 seconds on the clock. And Houston had to know it also, and they couldn't stop it. I thought it was brilliant from Todd Bowles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And now Tampa, 2-0 to start the year, with 2 last-minute comebacks on touchdown drives, 2 wins on the road, without Chris Godwin, without Tristan Wirfs, and for this game, without Wirfs, Godwin, and Gadicke, both their tackles and one of their best wide receivers. So I spent some time earlier today thinking about it, because I'll be real with everyone. It felt a little different to me last night. The Buccaneers felt a little different to me last night with another Baker Mayfield comeback. So the question I'm asking myself is, and I'm curious, you the listener and you the viewer, as you think about this also, what's your opinion? Do the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have an NFC championship winning upside this season? Can the Bucs win the NFC and get to Super Bowl 60? And I thought about it. And while I'm so impressed with what they've done to start the year, and I won't discount it at all, and I think they're going to win the NFC South, I do think Tampa will win the division. Because think about, again, like, Wirfs hasn't played and Godwin hasn't played, and they've done what they've done. I still think the upside for this team is probably the divisional round. Lose to the Packers, lose to the Philadelphia Eagles, even though they've had success against the Eagles. Lose to the Rams. I don't know if I view Tampa in this category just yet. Now, I mentioned that there was a bet that I liked coming out of last night's game. That actually, a bet that had nothing to do with either Tampa or the Houston Texans. I can't stop thinking about the Atlanta Falcons. And I can't stop thinking about if the Falcons didn't lose their top two wide receivers at the end of week one against Tampa, they would have won the game. If they had Parker Romo kicking instead of Younghoe Koo, the game, like, in all likelihood goes to overtime, and who knows what happens from there. And then Atlanta slammed the Vikings this past Sunday night. With what we've seen from Tampa, the fact that Atlanta should have beaten Tampa in week one and then destroyed the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota in one of the loudest stadiums I've ever heard, I think speaks very well to the Falcons' playoff chances this season. They're on the road at the Carolina Panthers this weekend. They're going to be 2-1. They're plus 105 to make the playoffs. I am in on the Atlanta Falcons at that price to make the playoffs as either a wild card team or the NFC South champions. On the other side, we'll recap Chargers, Raiders, the betting impact for both teams. Femi will join with his betting opinions from last night.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
Boise State Bronco lined up behind Smith. Expects to be busy tonight. They fake it to him, and Smith throws. Almost picked up. In fact, on a carom, it's into the hands of Dalen Henley. A dangerous throw, and on the carom, the elite linebacker for the Chargers has a takeaway in the first play.
You're tuned in to You Better You Bet with Nick Costos and the crew on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
Chris Fowler with the call last night on ESPN. Bad start to the game for Geno Smith. Bad middle of the game for Geno Smith. Bad ending to the game for Geno Smith. One of the worst games of Geno Smith's career, which is saying something. Because I watched Geno play for the New York Jets early on in his career. As the Chargers just slam the Raiders in Las Vegas. Final score is only 20-9. But this is one of those where it's like Commanders-Packers last Thursday night. Look at the final score. Packers only win by 9. Oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. Oh, it was. And this was kind of similar. The Chargers all over the Raiders. It felt like the Raiders were never going to get anything going on offense. Geno, on 43 attempts... 180 yards on 43 attempts. That's impressive. Three interceptions and no touchdowns. Besides for that, on the Raiders offense, and Brock Bowers isn't 100% healthy, and like obviously you want Bowers to be 100% healthy because he's maybe the best tight end in the league, but it's way more than just Bowers not being healthy. Geno stunk, and the Raiders can't trust Ashton Jeanty in pass protection. Now, some people are turning this into because Jeanty ceding work in this game to Zamir White, who's an absolute scrub. Like, he's a jag, just a guy. And Dylan Laub, who people remember last year, I kept trying to make a thing on in anytime touchdown bets. Because the Raiders running backs all stunk last year, and I thought Laub should play. He actually looked pretty decent in this game. But the whole thing is, like, why are you drafting a running back sixth overall if he's coming off the field for Zamir White and Dylan Laub? And look, like, Jeanty hasn't played great, and he'll be the first one to tell you. He had a quote, I thought this was an alarming quote, after last night's game, saying, I'm still getting used to the speed of the NFL. What? Like, running back's the one position where you feel like guys come out of college and, like, they're awesome right away. Like, you usually don't have to wait for running backs to be good. I'm not saying Gentry can't be good. To be fair, like, Amari and Hampton hasn't exactly been Marshall Faulk to start his career for the Chargers, but it's a little alarming. Like, Ashton Gentry's got to learn how to pass protect. It is embarrassing right now for the Raiders. Six overall for a team that's lacking talent in a lot of spots on the roster to take a running back, and then he can't play all, he can't play every snap for you. In big spots, here's Zamir White and Dylan Lobb because Ashton Gentry doesn't, I can't protect the blitz, can't pick up a blitz to save his life. Not great for the Las Vegas Raiders. Just like absolutely stupid and ridiculous. If we have time, we'll get to the Tom Brady part of this equation, which I actually think is pretty entertaining and pretty funny. As far as the Raiders go, and then we'll talk about the Chargers. I think they stink. I said it before the season. I know Femi disagrees. He likes the Raiders. A lot of people like the Raiders this year. They did beat the Patriots in week one and looked really impressive. Honestly, and I can be wrong about this, and we'll see what happens this weekend. To me, that's like way more about the Patriots stinking than it is about the Raiders potentially being good. Because you went up against the defense, and like the Chargers defense has been really good to start the year. Like, we'll see how they look without Khalil Mack for however long he's out for with his elbow injury. This was an alarming performance for the Las Vegas Raiders. Maybe Jaden Daniels misses the game on Sunday and Marcus Mariota plays on the road in our nation's capital. Maybe the Raiders go to 2-1. Maybe. I do not think this team is any good. I'll stand by my under 6.5. I bet it. I do not think the Raiders will make the playoffs. I think this is still the last place team in the AFC West. The offensive line stinks. Geno is way too inconsistent. The 6th overall pick at running back can't stay on the field an entire game because he can't pick up the blitz. And the defense is hot garbage outside of Max Crosby. Other than that, then yeah, like this is like the 1976 Raiders. Other than that, that's the Raiders. As far as the Chargers go, 2-0 start. And not just 2-0. 2-0 in the division. Beat the Chiefs in week one, beat the Raiders last night. And they have the chance on Sunday, when they host the Denver Broncos, to start 3-0 in the division in the first 3 weeks of the season, which is crazy to think any team could accomplish. And the Chargers might just do it. They are favored to do so on Sunday. A 2.5-point home favorite right now. You want to know how good of a head coach Jim Harbaugh is? He's made Quentin Johnston look like a viable NFL receiver. Quentin Johnston left for dead by football analysts, fantasy football players, dynasty fantasy players, like me. I held him in a couple leagues. I'm happy I did, but I cut him loose in some spots. I can't afford to hold this roster spot. They drafted two receivers. He dropped so many passes. He looks awesome through two games. And Justin Herbert is playing at an MVP level. And they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I like how, like, Greg Roman, like, ended last season. All they want to do is run the ball with him and Jim Harbaugh. All of a sudden, he wakes up now, and he's Bill Walsh. He's Mike Martz. But get out of bed, we're throwing. This is, he's June Jones. Just roll out of bed and let's throw on every single play. It's like greatest show on turf stuff. It's like pass rate over expectation at the top of the league, the Chargers. I find it fascinating. I think it's really fun. And I think it's potentially masking what could be an issue for this team. Through 2 weeks, it's early. The Raiders defense is not exactly the 85 Bears. This team can't run the ball. Omarion Hampton has yet to look like he did at North Carolina, and maybe it'll come. Najee Harris makes his plays last night for the Chargers, and he looks okay. They have not been able to run the ball. And I'm fascinated, as the season moves along, if Justin Herbert can keep doing this. And I'm not saying he can't. I'm not saying the Chargers can't win the division. I'm not saying they can't make a deep playoff run. But I want to be clear about something. I think this is an important way to frame it. And I don't know if anyone could even disagree with what I'm going to say. The Chargers have personnel limitations on both sides of the ball. And I know the defense has been great to start the year. Like, there aren't that many great players on this defense. Jesse Minter's doing an awesome job coordinating it. I think they've got personnel limitations. The way that the Chargers make a deep run is if Justin Herbert's Josh Allen. It's if Justin Herbert's Lamar Jackson. If Justin Herbert's Patrick Mahomes. Has he ascended to that level? Is he in that rarefied air? If he is, yeah, Chargers could go 13-4. Easy. If he's going to be that good. If he's not, though, and if he's, you know, on the cusp of, like, in between very good and great, which is, like, way better than most quarterbacks, I still don't think this team has an ultimate upside. And I'm not trying to be a hater. That's my honest opinion. I don't think they have that ultimate upside. And the other thing to watch out for now, Khalil Mack with this elbow injury. I would guess he's not going to play at minimum this week against the Broncos. We have no definitive word yet, and then we'll see from there. When the Chargers let Joey Bosa walk this offseason, and he signs with the Buffalo Bills, we all said this team's going to have issues depth rushing the passer. Can Tuli Tuipulotu get it done without Khalil Mack getting so much pressure and so much attention put on him? You know, they have a fourth-round pick at pass rusher who can't get on the field, like inactive the first two games. Where is the pass rush coming from with Khalil Mack out? I think this sets up for a really interesting game on Sunday with the Chargers and the Broncos. And you know, you already know, I'll be backing my Broncos in that game. You better you bet on this Tuesday. Mark Schlereth will join us to start next hour. A couple more minutes in this segment. Femi, do you have betting thoughts, my friend, coming out of last night's game? And if you want to turn this into like a Raiders therapy session, the floor is yours.
Why would we need therapy? It's week two. We're good, baby. We're good. Nobody's wavering, all right? Like I said in the first hour, we stood here on business with the Rams 1-4 last year. We're going to still stand here on business. They're 1-1.
It's a little.
They might be facing Marcus Mariota.
It's a little different or no? Is this, be honest? Femi, you're always honest, and I mean that. Is this copium from you right now or no?
No. No, we're two games into the season. They're 1-1. I mean, like, they won one game as an underdog. They lost another game as an underdog. Like, why would I be panicked? Now, if they go on to like be 1-5, then yeah, maybe it's copium me saying they're going to still make the playoffs. At that point, it's probably ridiculous. But I still think this team can make the playoffs. I mean, they could win on Sunday and be 2-1.
If Jaden Daniels doesn't play, they could definitely win that game.
100%. And this is part of the Geno Smith experience, which is why Geno's so polarizing, by the way. Because like you get some games, there's like 2 to 3 games every year where Geno is like awesome and he looks like a top 10 quarterback. There's 2 to 3 games a year where Geno's horrendous, like last night, where he looks like, how did this guy ever get a starting job? And then there's the rest of the games, which where he plays like the 15th best quarterback in the league. And like, I think the both sides of the Geno arguments, they cling to the outlier performances as opposed to focusing on like what's like the median performance. And I think you're going to get Geno, who's going to bounce back, had a terrible game. Like, everybody has eyeballs. We all saw it. But he's not that bad. He's not going to miss guys wide open like he was all throughout last night. I think you'll see an improved Geno this weekend. I think there's a chance that they cover. I think there's a chance that they win the game. So the Raiders, we're still on track. It's no shaking in our boots here just because we lost the game to the Chargers, who I think actually look like the best team in the AFC West as it stands right now.
Do you think that Herbert has that in him? Like to raise the ceiling of this team, and they could be a Super Bowl team if Herbert's going to play at this level all year.
I think he does because Jim Harbaugh's his head coach. Like this is the same Jim Harbaugh who revived Alex Smith's career. Alex Smith, if everybody forgets, that dude was like one more season away from being out the league. He revived his career, went to a Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. Like this is the Jim Harbaugh who won a national title with JJ McCarthy. Like this guy gets the most out of quarterbacks. Talent's never been
JJ.
The issue with Herbert.
You're burying JJ already? Two games in?
I mean, I bet him on Sunday night. It didn't go well, man.
God, it's already. Like, it's over for JJ McCarthy. Unbelievable.
I mean, KOC's dialing up wide open shots, man. Like, hey, we got to hit him.
We'll talk about this more coming up next hour on the show. Hour one done, hour two for you coming up on the other side. We start the hour. Odyssey Sports NFL Insider, the great Mark Schlereth.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.